Today's shiur is Masechta Sukkah Daf Chaf Aleph, and we will begin on Daf Chaf Aleph, Amr Aleph, the fifth line, the Sefer of Yehuda. In the previous shiur, we had discussed a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the only oil that is considered an oil that brings tumah, if there's a mace or kezais of a mace under the same roof, we know that the tumah spreads under everything under that roof. Rabbi Yehuda taught us it's only on a man-made oil. Whereas the Rabbanan disagreed, the Rabbanan learned that it applies to every type of oil, man-made or not man-made. Actually, the Aruch Lener asks, how could Rabbi Yehuda say that an oil is considered only an oil when it's man-made? We're learning Masechta Sukkah, and as we've learned so many times, and we'll continue learning actually in this parak, a sukkah is considered an oil, and the sukkah, we know, as we discussed, according to one Tana, is zecher for the Anani HaKavod, and the Anani HaKavod were created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so they weren't man-made, yet they're called an oil. Says the Aruch Lener that Rabbi Yehuda will agree that if there is an oil, even if it was not man-made, but it was created specifically for the purpose of people, then it will be considered an oil. And therefore, says Rabbi Yehuda, although the Anani HaKavod were created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, since they were created for HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the purpose of Klal Yisrael, so they're considered man-made and are considered an oil. Our Gemara will now continue discussing Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. However, in introduction to what we're going to learn, we need to review the halacha of Para Aduma, or some aspects of the halacha of Para Aduma. We know that if someone became Tomei Meis, he had to go under the through the process of the sprinkling of a mixture of the ashes of the Para Aduma and water on the third and seventh day process. There is a din in the Torah that teaches us that even a person who's a tefil yoim, a person who went to the mikveh that day and did not yet have harav shemesh, where normally we know such a person still has a vestige of tumah, the Torah teaches us that such a person may be the one that will sprinkle the Para Aduma mixture on the person who's Tamei. The Tzedakim denied the authority of Tarish Bapeh and therefore did not agree with the Drasha and felt that only somebody who's fully Tahor can do the sprinkling of the Para Aduma. In order to show that we don't agree with the Tzedakim, the Chachamim instituted that right before burning the Para Aduma, the Kohen who was to burn it would purposely be made Tamei. Then he would go to the mikvah, so he would be at Tfil Yoim when burning the Para Aduma. However, by doing this, the Chachamim were concerned that people would develop an attitude of laxity regarding the Tahara of Para Aduma. So therefore, to counteract such a possibility, Chazal instituted certain chumras regarding the preparation of Para Aduma. So for example, they said that all the preparations of the Para Aduma were to be made in utensils made of stone or dung or earth, which are not mekabel tumah. They required that the Rikoyin who was to burn the Para Aduma should be sequestered in the Beis HaMikdash complex for 7 days, and that any Kohen should not be allowed to touch him during that time. Also, they were misakin that during all those 7 days he should be sprinkled with Para Aduma water, and they were misakin that the water used for the sprinkling of on these Kohanim were to be drawn and transported to the Beis HaMikdash by children who had been shielded from Tumas Mes from birth. And that is exactly what the Gemara is going to be quoting now, how these children were protected and were the ones that actually brought the water to the Kohen Gadol to be sprinkling. The children had to be raised special courtyards, as we're going to learn. They never became tamei. It can never be a child above 9 years old bringing the Parah Aduma water, because the halach is that once a child is 9 years old, we're concerned that he had an emission of keri, and therefore he already was exposed to tumah. And as Tosfos teaches us, the concern here is that this child should have never experienced any tumas meis or any emission of tumah from his body. And therefore, we went through all of these great lengths to find such children. In fact, the Michas Yitzchok says in a tshuva that there is a minig that women who are pregnant do not go to Beis HaKfaris. Says the Michas Yitzchok, the basis for this minig is our Gemara. He says that women would be very anxious that their children should be able to grow up in the status of Tahara, and that they should be the children who bring the Parah Aduma water for the Kohen, who's going to ultimately do the Avodah with the Parah Aduma water. So women would raise the children to Tahara, and therefore not go to the Beis HaKfaris, or not go to the cemetery when they were pregnant, to prevent their children from coming to the status. And that's how the minhag evolved, that pregnant women don't go to the mikvah. Don't go to the Beis HaKfaris, I'm sorry. Although Apidin, the Magen Avraham, quotes from the Sefer Rekeach that a wife of a Kohen who's pregnant is allowed to go into a Oyel HaMeis, because even though there's a concern that her child may be a boy, and if he's a boy who's a Kohen is not allowed to go become Tamei, he says there's a Sfek Sfeika. Firstly, we're not sure that he's a boy. The child may be a girl. And furthermore, maybe Chas V'Shalom, the child is a Nefil, and anyway will not survive and not therefore be a viable child, so we don't have to be concerned. Ask the Magen Avraham, based on our Gemara, even if we know for sure that the child is a boy, she should not be prevented from going into her Oyel HaMeis, because since the child is absorbed in her body, she should not be, there should be no concern. And the Sefer Nesiv Chaim brings a proof to the Magen Avraham from our Gemara, because it says in our Gemara the concern we're going to learn is that the child from when he's born had to be protected not to be exposed to any tumah. But if the child can become tamei while he's still in his mother's womb, we should have only used children whose mothers had made sure they had never entered bayis where there's a meis. Says in the Sif Chaim that the Rekeach is not discussing a regular pregnant woman. A regular pregnant woman, certainly even if she goes into oil hames, would not affect her fetus. He says that the Rekeach is discussing a woman that's right before childbirth, and the concern is that since she's due imminently, she may have the child while she's in the oil hames. And therefore the Rekeach says, even if that's the case, we don't necessarily have to be concerned, because of the Sfek Sfeika, it may be a boy and it may be a nephil. Says the Gemara, V'sav Rabbi Yehuda, does Rabbi Yehuda indeed hold koil oil she'ena osa b'yedei adam ena oil, that any oil that's not man-made is not considered an oil? For a minhag we'll ask from the Mishnah in Olas, chatzeros hayabnuyas b'Yerushalayim, special courtyards were built in Yerushalayim al gabei ha'sela, on top of a bedrock, because it's unlikely under a bedrock there should be any corpse, any leftover of a mace. V'tachteim cholol. Under them, it was hollow beneath them. Because, in other words, they made a raised platform supported by arches on top of the bedrock, and they built the courtyard over the platform. Mipnei kaver atahayim, because we're concerned that there may be a kever deep down under this bedrock. So to make sure that the people, the children who were living in these courtyards would be shielded from any tumas atahayim that may rise up from below, Chazal instituted that the courtyards should be built on top of bedrock, under which it is highly unlikely that there's any leftover of a mess. And to further protect against the remote possibility that there more may be leftovers of a mess under the bedrock, so Chazal said that the courtyard should be built on a raised platform. So even in the unlikely event that there is a mess below, the raised platform will act as an oil, shielding all that is above it from the tumah, which cannot pass through the oil, because there's a separation, as we learned, if there's a separation of more than a tefach between the mace and the oil, the tumah does not go up. So they would bring to these courtyards pregnant women who would have their children there. And that's where they would raise the children to be able to do the paraduma. They would bring the paraduma water to the kohen in the Beis HaMikdash. And they would bring oxen. When it came the time to actually draw the water for the paraduma, they would bring oxen to these courtyards. Valgabeim dalsois, on top of them, they would put doors. And Ritva explains they specifically put doors, not boards, because a board, one could argue, as we've been learning, is meant for sitting. And since it's meant for sitting, it's susceptible to tumas medris. So they specifically bought doors that are not meant for sitting and are therefore not susceptible to tumas medris. And they put the children on top of these doors. The kaisa shall even be a dayim. And they would go with cups made out of stone. And they would go to the Shiloh spring, from where they would take the water. Higoyu l'shiloach, as they got to Shiloach, yordu l'toch ha'mayim, they would go into the water, umilim, and fill up the water. For all of Yoshlehem, and then they would go back and sit on top of the doors to go to the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yossi says, m'koymai hay m'shal shal m'malei, from where he sat on top of the door, he would lower his cup via rope into the spring, and that's how he would fill it up. They cover at time out of concern that there may be a mace deep in the river also. So in order that he shouldn't go and expose himself to that, he would go down into the river. Explains Rashi, why does the Tana Kama say that they went down? Why isn't the Tana Kama concerned that there perhaps is chas v'sholem some tum in that water that this child is exposing himself to? So Rashi explains, because the Tana Kama held that there has to be direct filling by hand from the shiloyach into the cup, and therefore using a rope is unacceptable. That's how Rashi explains. Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos says that the reason is because even Chazal, who instituted all of these precautions, weren't concerned that much that there should be any mace in the water. Rabbi Yehuda, v'tanya, we learned in the Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda, Meloha, Yevian, Dalsis, they would not bring doors to put on top of the oxen to transport the children. Al Shvar, they would actually ride on the oxen themselves, and that's how they would arrive to the Beis HaMikdash. Ask the Gemara for Shvarim. Shvarim are oxen, the oil shein osmadei adamhu. It's certainly not man-made, as we're learning in the Gemara, obviously. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and Rabbi Yehuda says, L'hayim v'in da'asas al shvarim. Rabbi Yehuda's the man, the Omer, that says that an oil that's not man-made is not considered an oil. Yet here he's saying that the children riding on the oxen are considered an oil. And if there was any tumah on the path that the children rode towards the shaloyach, the oxen would serve as an oil to separate them from that tumah. But it's not a man-made oil. Rabbi Yehuda says a non-man-made oil is not an oil. Answers the Gemara. Kios Rav Dimi Omer Belazar, Maida Rav Yehuda Kamalai Egreif. Rav Yehuda agrees that in the case of an oil that isn't man-made, it's naturally formed, but if it's as large as a fist, and as Rashi explains, it's not regular size fist of a person, but it's the fist of Ben Avtiach, who was a person had a very large fist, if actually was larger than a man's head, that is considered an oil even when it's not man-made. And therefore the axe, which is such a large oil, is considered an oil. The Rashi quotes further that we find this concept that depending on the size, it makes a difference if it's man-made or not man-made, because Rashi quotes a Gemara, quotes a Mishnah. The Mishnah is that if there's a tumas mes in a tent, we know that there's tum in the whole tent. The halacha is, if somebody drills a hole in the wall of the tent in order that light should come in, the tumah will pass through the hole to an adjacent tent, even if the hole is as small as an Italian pungent, a very small coin. However, says Rashi, if the hole is naturally formed, the tumah does not pass through it unless the hole is as large as the fist of Ben Avtiach, who we just referred to. Similarly, in our Gemara, even though Reb Yehuda says that a naturally formed oil is not considered an oil, but if it's a larger size oil, the size of a fist, then it is considered an oil. Continues the Gemara, Tanya Nami Hachi, Omayd Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda agrees, Ben Nekikin, when we're dealing with uprooted boulders, or Menekike Sloim, or rock crevices that make shelter, that although they're naturally formed, since they're so large, they're considered an oil. Ask the Gemara, Vreidelis, but the door, the also Yesh by Kamagroifen, the door is certainly large enough that it takes up the space of many fists. Vaktani, yet we just finished learning, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, L'hayim avim da'asos el shvarim, that they didn't transport the children by putting them on top of doors, they transported them by carrying them on the oxen. But the door is certainly an oil. So why would Rabbi Yehuda not accept an oil on the door? Why does he dafka need the oxen? Amra Baya. So Bai says what Rabbi Yehuda meant to say is, certainly you could bring the children on the doors. The doors are certainly considered an oil, given their size. What Rabbi Yehuda meant to say was, there was no need to carry them on the doors, because the doors themselves are, because the oxen themselves serve as a mechitza. Rav Amma. Rava says, Rabbi Yehuda insists the loy hayu mevi'in da'asas kalikr, that they didn't bring doors. Why? When a child is sitting on a door, he feels very confident, he feels very secure, and then there's a concern, he may extend his head or one of his limbs beyond the door, and that's why Hakas V'Sham may become exposed to kever at tahayim. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda insists not to bring the door, because the door can lead to problems. Taisus makes a number of observations. Taisus says, as we said in our introduction, that the only consideration we have here is a consideration that the child should not be exposed to tumas mes, and that's why we protect him from kever tahayim, and that the child should be never have had an emission. And that's why we don't use children that are above 9 years old. However, every child is born from a mother who is a nida. She becomes a nida and a yoledes when she has the child. That tumah we're not concerned about. However, it says since the child was exposed to that tumah, besides everything else mentioned here that the child we did with the child, we did with the children, we also made sure that the children should have tefillah before they went to bring the water to the kohen. Tosfos also says that how could this shor, this axe, with the door on him, without the door on him, be considered an oil? Isn't it an oil zorik? Isn't it considered a moving oil? And the halacha is that oil zorik loishmei oil. So Tosfos says it must be that our Gemara is going according to the Man D'Amar that says that a moving oil is considered an oil, which is actually a very relevant shaila regarding kohanim. Kohanim, if they travel on a plane or they travel in a closed box, may they go through a Beis HaKvaros if it's coldly enclosed. Why isn't it considered an oil zorik? So the Shailos and Tshuvos Rav Pa'alim says that a kohen should not travel through a cemetery in an enclosed vehicle. Firstly, because this shaila of oil zorik, shmei oil, lo shmei oil, is a machlokes tanoim, so you shouldn't be so quick to decide that it's not considered an oil. And furthermore, he says we have to be concerned that the kohen may stick his head out the window, and then certainly he's exposed to the tumah, and therefore a kohen should not rely on an oil zorik. Says the Gemara, Tanya Kavosi de Rava, and we learn a brisa that explains that agrees with Rava's interpretation of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yamvin dalsus kalikar, they didn't put doors on top of the axe to transport the children. Neshadata shaltina gasalov, the child will become very confident, and we're concerned shemi yotzi roishay ech mivarov, he may extend his head or one of his limbs, the yitma bekever tahoim, and that's how he'll become tahoim, recover tahoim. Ella, mevim shvarm hamitzrim, they bring the Egyptian axe, which are very wide, shekrusayim revchavis, so his bellies are wide, but tenaikus yoshvim al gabayim, the children sit on their backs, the koysu shalavim yedayim, holding these stone cups, higil shloach, and they arrived to the shloach yardu milam. They would descend to the water and fill up the cups for all of the yoshvel gabeim, and then they would go back and sit on top of the oxen. Ask the Gemara, extending this concept to our Mishnah Vremita. Let's look at every bed. A bed is the yesh bekama groifin. It's certainly the size of several fists. And yet, Tanan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Nahagim Hayinu, we had the custom, Sheyinu Yishenim Tachas Hamita, that we would sleep under the bed in the Sukkah, with Nezakenim, before the Zakenim, they wouldn't say anything to us. Ask the Gemara, if according to Rabbi Yehuda, anything that is this size is considered an oil, so it's a separate area. So how could one lie under the bed and still be Mekayim Mitzvah Sukkah? Says the Gemara, Shani Mita Hoy L'Gaba Asuya. A bed is different because it's meant for use of its top. So even though the bed covers an area which is larger than many fists, it's not considered to be an oil. And as the Mefarshim explained, when we have an item, even if it wasn't specifically made to be an oil, if it has the characteristics of an oil, it has the din of an oil. However, when we have an item which was specifically made not to be used for the area under it, it's made specifically to be used for the area over it, that specific intent gives it the status, does not allow the status of an oil to be given to such an item. Ask the Gemara, if so, Shvarim nami l'gabon asuyim. Oxen are meant for the use of the tops. People sit on top of oxen, not under oxen. Says the Gemara, Ki os ravna rabbi Lezer, there's a difference between an axe and a bed. Shani shvar, hoyle meginim al aroyim, the oxen shelter the shepherds, the sunny season from the sun, the shepherds would lie under them when it would get rainy or very sunny, and they used as an oil. Ihachi asked the Gemara, Mitonami, Hoil Magina Manolim Sandolim Shatachtea, a bed is also used to shelter the shoes and sandals that are put under it. And as Rashi explains, that the Gemara specifies that only sandals and shoes are left under the bed, nothing else should be left under the bed, because Rashi explains, if people was a bed is in a bedroom, and a bedroom should be an area that's private for a husband and wife, if people will leave many different items under the bed, the bedroom will become a place where people constantly come, and therefore to prevent that, nothing should be left under the bed. In fact, the halacha is that nothing, specifically food, should not be left under the bed. However, the halacha is that if b'di'evid, most paiskim hold, somebody did leave food under the bed, it would not become usur. Although there is a ma'aser rav from the Gra, there was food brought to the Gra that was left under the bed, and the Gra said that it should be ground up to make sure that nobody would ever eat that food. But the Pesach Tshuva says that he quotes the Sefer Binas Adam, that nowadays this Peder being so strict about it no longer exists. The Paiskim also discuss what would be the halacha if one would put his esrig under the bed, and would that esrig be allowed to be used? And again, l'chatchila, one should be careful not to put the esrig under the bed, but the evid, it's acceptable. The Shaul HaTshuvas Silmas Chaim from Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld says that if the entire issue is only on a bed where people are sleeping on, but a bed where nobody is sleeping on, this peda that we're discussing about food that being left under the bed is not relevant. On the other hand, the Shaul HaTshuvas Rav Paolim says that l'chatchila we should be makpid that even food should not be left under the table. And the Shaul HaTshuvas Prisada says that even if the food that we put under the bed is put in a sealed box, still food should not l'chatchila be left under the bed. However, that the Shaul HaTshuvas Churas Shai says that this doesn't apply to the bed on which a guy sleeps, nor says the Shaul HaTshuvas Levushim Mordechai does it apply to a bed under which a child sleeps. El Amarava. So we're back to where we started. Just like the oxen people are sheltered under the oxen, and therefore it's considered an oil. Since shoes are left under the bed, it should be considered an oil. So again, why does a Yehuda allow someone to sleep under the bed in a sukkah? El Amarava Shani Shvarim. Oxen are different from a bed. They're made to protect their own body. Shnema, as the Pasuk says in Eif, or ubasa tal bisheni, or bat somis vegidim tesoichicheni. With skin and flesh you have clothed me, and with bones and avarim and gidim you have sheltered me. And in fact, Tosfos points out that the Pasuk really discusses not an axe. The Pasuk discusses a person. And therefore, Tosfos, just like an animal is considered an oil, a person should be considered an oil. In fact, based on this, the Aruch HaNer refers back to a Shaila that we discussed yesterday. Yesterday we discussed if one could sleep on the lower bed of a bunk bed in the sukkah. So, aside from the Shaila, is that considered sleeping under the bed? Is that considered Yotfachim? Says the Aruch HaNer that if someone is sleeping on the upper bed, our Gemara just said especially according to the way Tosfos was explained, that a person is certainly considered a mechitza. So if there's somebody sleeping in the upper bed, no one should be allowed to sleep under him. Says Rav Ozner, that although the Aruch HaNer makes this point in our Gemara, we know the Aruch HaNer also wrote a sefer on Hilchos Sukkah called Bikurei Yaakov, and in that sefer he doesn't quote this din. He doesn't say in that sefer that one should not sleep in a bed below somebody sleeping in a bed above him, and therefore Rav Ozner, as we explained yesterday in Shalos Tshuva Shevet Halevi, allows one to sleep even on the lower bed of a bunk bed, even if someone is sleeping on the upper bed. Vibay Seima, another reason why Rabbi Yehuda allows to sleep someone to sleep under a bed in the sukkah, because Rabbi Yehuda l'tamei. Rabbi Yehuda is going according to his shita that we've already learned. Dama sukkah stiras kvabin. He holds that a sukkah has to be a fixed dira. The havelay mita dira sarai. Certainly, the area under the bed is temporary. The sukkah, as we just said, is the oil kvah. And therefore, v'loy also oil arai, this temporary dwelling under the bed, does not have the ability to mevatel oil kvah, to nullify a fixed shelter. Ask the Gemara, Rav Shimon, the Amen Nami, sukkah diras kvah bin. We know Rav Shimon holds that a sukkah has to be diras kvah. How do we know it? Because we learned that Rav Shimon holds that a sukkah has to have four walls, because it has to be a diras kvah. Yet, Rabbi Shimon is the one that says that somebody can't sleep under a bed. So we see that osi oil arai umavat oil kva, that even a temporary dwelling does have the ability to nullify a fixed dwelling. And says the Gemara b'ha pligi, that's exactly the machloikis between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Ma savar Rabbi Shimon hold osi oil arai umavat oil kva. A temporary dwelling has the ability to nullify a fixed shelter. A mass sover, Rabbi Yehuda holds, Vayasa Oil Arai and Vatel Kava, that it does not have the ability. So the Mishnah quoted at the end of the Mishnah, Amram Shimon, Mass of Tevi Avdai, there was a story where Tevi, Ragamliya's slave, was sleeping under the bed, and Rabbi Shimon said to the Zakenim that, don't you see that Tevi is a Talmud Chacham, and he knows that they don't have to, that Avodim Kananim are exempt from the mitzvah of Sukkah, and therefore he sleeps under the bed. So we see that somebody who does have to be Mekayim mitzvah Sukkah may not sleep under a bed. Tanya Omer Rav Shimon, Misichosa Shor Gamliel, from what Rav Gamliel just said in casual conversation, Lamadnu Shnei Dvarim, we learned two dinim. Lamadnu Shavodim Pturim in a Sukkah, we learned that slaves don't have to sit in a Sukkah. And we also learned that somebody who sleeps under a bed hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah sukkah. Says the Gemara, why did they use the word misichosoi? Like Rashi says, sichosoi means casual conversation, besimcha, that I said just casually enjoy. Say from the words of a Gamliel. Says the Gemara, milsag of urcha kabashma, the Gemara wants to teach us another teaching. Kiha da amr of achabar ada. Vamr lay amr of achabar ada, amr of amnun amarav. Menayin shafil sikhash tamid chom tzich limit. Where do we know that even casual conversation of tamid chomim requires analysis? There's a lot in just those casual words. Shnem valay layivel. It says regarding tamid chomim, that's at the beginning of Tehillim, that the words are like a leaf which will not wither. That even the leaves, which normally don't really have that much in them, are so strong. So too, the words of Talmid Chacham, the casual words of Talmid Chacham, contain in them lessons forever. And in fact, the Chartkver Rebbe used to explain that just like the leaves are used to prepare medicine, so too, from the simple words of the Talmid Chachamim, we can learn so much. The Devar Chaim used to explain, Sichas Talmid Chachamim Tzricha Limud. When one exposes himself to Talmud Chachim and hears the way he speaks, every word is so said, so exact. And every word, there's so much meaning to it. And of course, there's only always a Lashon Nekiya. Tzricha Limud, it causes the person to want to become a Talmud Chacham. It screams out, Limud, go learn Torah, so you should be like that Talmud Chacham. However, and that's why the Bnei Yisachar says, we find that wherever the Gemara quotes, wherever Rashi quotes something from Masechta Chulin, Rashi doesn't call it Masechta Chulin. Rashi is always careful to call it Sichas Chulin. Why does he call it Shchitas Chulin? Why does he call it Shchitas Chulin? To teach us that we don't want to use our words should just be Chulin. That every word we're so careful that it should be a words of Torah. Because that is really what Avodas Hashem is all about. Avodas Hashem is all about. It's not only when somebody is in the Beis HaMidrash. Not only when somebody is in the Beis HaMidrash, even when somebody is speaking, casual speaking, Tzricha Limud, there's so much Torah in those words. The Talmud Yaakov Yosef explains, Sichas Talmid Chachamim Tzricha Limud. What does it say, Sichas Talmid Chachamim? It should have said Sichas Chachamim. Says the Gemara, this that with Talmid Chachamim are called Talmid Chachamim. What are they called Talmid Chachamim? They should be called Chachamim. To teach us, Sichas Talmid Chachamim, we should always be learning from the Talmid Chachamim, not just when they're giving a shiur, but even their regular speaking, Tzricha Limud, we should always be learning from the words of Talmud Chacham what to say and how to say it. Continues the Gemara, Hasoimech Sukkosoi Bekarei Amita. If one supports his sukkah with the posts of his bed, as is shown in diagram 132, on page 44, Ksheira the sukkah is kosher. Rehuda Omer, Rehuda however it says, Emeni chayil lam b'fnei atzmai. If the sukkah cannot stand on its own, psula, then the sukkah is pasul. Ask the Gemara, my time of Yehuda. What's the reason for Yehuda that he disqualifies the sukkah? Says the Gemara, pligibar of zera ra'aba b'mamal, charama b'nei she'en l'kva. It lacks permanence, because it could be moved around from place to place, and therefore this kind of mobile dwelling place is not considered a sukkah, especially Rabbi Yehuda Lishitasoi, who holds, as we just learned, that a sukkah has to be a diras kva. However, explained the Rishonim, the disqualification only applies where the schach does not remain in a fixed position relative to the floor of the sukkah. However, let's say somebody will build a sukkah on a wagon or on a boat, but it's a sturdy sukkah, even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that that's a valid sukkah. Furthermore, that it's Rabbi Yehuda that holds this as being disqualified, because Rabbi Yehuda holds, as we just learned, that a sukkah has to be diras kva. We, however, hold that a sukkah should be a diras arai. So therefore, this disqualification would not be a disqualification according to us. The Chad Omer, and the other man Omer holds, because he's holding up the schach, which is something which is susceptible to tumah, and not only may not the schach be made out of a material which is susceptible to tumah, but even what supports the schach may not be made out of something susceptible to tumah. My benayu, ask the Gemara, what's the difference between these two explanations? Says the Gemara, kenot food in shabazo. If somebody drove iron spikes into the ground, v'sichachalim, and put schach on top of them. L'man, Domer, Lafish and Lakva, according to Mandomer, that holds that the sukkah is possible because it lacks this strongness. Harayesh Lakva, you have iron spits here. Mandomer Nation, Mamida Bedova Makabotoma, the one that says that the sukkah is being supported by something which is susceptible to Toma, Harim Mamida Bedova Makabotoma. Here we still have that problem. Om Rabbi, however, Rabbi qualifies Rabbi Yehuda's din, and he says, Loi Shona El Somach. It only applies when somebody supported the schach with the post of the bed. But if somebody put schach over the bed so that the boards of the bed form the walls of the sukkah, but the schach rests on separate, fixed, freestanding frame, kshera. Such a sukkah is kosher. And this is shown in diagram 133. My tama, According to Yehuda, the sukkah is possible because it's not fixed enough. This is sturdy. That the bed is susceptible to tumma and therefore cannot be used to support the bed. Here he hasn't used the bed, which is susceptible to tumma, to hold up the schach. He's used post. And this is the basis for the halacha that the schach should not be supported by something which is mekabel tumma. There's a machloikis harishonim, how to understand this gezeira. Is what the Gemara meant to say that you're not allowed to use something mekabel tumma to hold up the schach a din deraisa? That just like we learned that midaraisa, you're not allowed to use something mekabel tumma for schach, the din deraisa even applies to something that supports the schach? Or is it a din midrabanan that Chazal were concerned that one should, that one may end up using a schach that's possible if he supports his sukkah with schach that's mekabel tumma, would support the schach with something that's mekabel tumma, and therefore it's a gzeirat rabbanan? And we know that there's the chumra of the Chazon Ish, that the Chazon Ish said that not only the things that support the schach should not be made out of something mekabel tumma, but even the mamid, the things, something that supports the support, may also not be made out of something mekabel tumma. It's really a shitas rishonim. There are some rishonim say that the ritva means that. There's some mefarshim say that the ritva means that. And really, the mefarshim say really speaks to the matter: is it a gzeir drabonin or is it a deraisa? If it's a deraisa, so deraisa is only on the maimed. However, if it's a drabonin, so drabonin who were concerned that if you have material being used in the sukkah that is possibly confused, that one may use something that's makabel tumma, so it may even affect the maimed. Moreover, the Chelkas Yoyev says, specifically according to the Shita, that says that the sukkah is Zeicha Lanani HaKovet, so they were enveloped by the Anani HaKovet from all sides, not just on the top. And that's the Makar, that's the source that the sukkah should not be made out of anything from Makabal Tumah, including the walls. The Noida Behuda says that even if we're not allowed to use something that's a mekabel tumah as a maimed for the schach, however, he says that if the only reason you put this up is that you're concerned that if you don't give this extra support to the schach, if it'll be very windy, the schach may fly away or fall down, that may not be considered a maimed. L'chatchila, we should certainly not do that, but according to the Noid Behuda, if that's the only reason you put up such a maimed, it may not be disqualified. Ask the Rosh that if we're saying that we're not allowed to use something that's mekabel tumma to support the schach, so too we should not be allowed to use something which is not gidula me'aretz, it doesn't grow from the ground, because we know that to be considered kosher schach, the material has to be gedula menorahs. But he says, the Rosh says this already, people in his time would build sukkahs with a stone wall and put the schach directly on the top of the stone wall. We aren't supposed to be supporting the schach with something which is not qualified to be used as schach, explains the Ran. The Ran says, as we said, that the entire gzeira, the entire reason why we're not allowed to use a maimed that's not kosh for schach, is drabonon, because we shouldn't confuse and use this item as schach. Says the Ran, the Chazal applied this isser only on items where there's a likelihood to make such a mistake. However, a stone wall, they did not ever be concerned that somebody would cover his sukkah with stones, and therefore one could put, says the Ran, his schach directly on top of stone. The Sfas Emes explains it this way. He says the gzeira do not apply to walls. The Chazal were concerned that one, if somebody goes and brings something to support the schach, he may end up using that as a schach. Says the Sfas Emes, only when somebody brought an item whose sole purpose is to hold up the schach, do we have a concern that he'll use that material as the schach. However, this concern does not apply to the walls of a sukkah, because they're not functioning as support for the schach, they're serving as walls of the sukkah. And therefore, the walls of the sukkah, even if the schach are lying directly on top of them, says the Sfas Emes, may be used, may be made out of material which is not kosher for schach. The halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, and therefore we would be allowed to use even a davar mekabel tumah as support for the schach. However, says the Magen Avraham, the one should be machmer and refrain from using any davar hamekabel tumah to support the schach, since he says there are a number of rishonim that paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. The Ramah says that one should not put a ladder or a bench, which are utensils and are there for mekabel tumah, on top of a schach to secure it from blowing away, because this too is considered as though the schach is being supported by a davar mekabel tumah.